You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito, and with Mary Lou Nemechek, we are going to continue telling you about our trip to the Holy Land. We just finished telling you about the community of Qumran in our last show, and today we're going to tell you about our experience at the Jordan River at the baptismal site of the Lord, and it was truly, really cool. And you're showing me a group picture, right?
Yes, and you know, the last time we were there, we went to a different site. This one was not open because it was actually an Israeli military site.
Mm-hmm.
And they allow you to go in now. And if you remember when the Pope was in Israel, or I mean in Jordan, he went to the other side of the site through Jordan where the churches are and mm-hmm. went to the Jordan River. This was Pope Benedict, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so this time we were fortunate enough to be able to go to this site, which is believed to be the original site of where Jesus was baptized mm-hmm. in the Jordan. And it was so fascinating. It was such a great experience because the Jordan is quite narrow there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very deep because we watch groups go in the water to be rebaptized again
mm-hmm.
or reenact that. And they could just stand right there at the edge in the water and not, you know, drown and go under.
We had a whole group of Russians who went
yes.
in, all hook, line, and sinker.
Yep.
All 30 of them went
oh,
all
yes,
the way
they did.
In, all the way out.
Yes.
And it was not warm.
No,
right?
It wasn't.
I'm constantly shocked about what a nothing river the Jordan is.
Yes.
I mean, it really looks like the creek.
Yes.
It looks like the Elkhorn Creek or something.
Yes, it does.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet on the other side,
Is Jordan. I mean, they're so close together. This gives you such a sense of all these different
right?
countries. It's being like the states, you know,
mm-hmm.
Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very close.
Cheek by jowl. It was anyway, it was pretty amazing because, of course, we did the renewal of the baptismal vow.
Mm-hmm.
Father Chris prayed over all of us. It was
individually,
quite touching.
And it was really, it
a
was
lot
wonderful.
Of people were very touched
mm-hmm.
by that, especially, you know, the peripheral people who come and they don't really know what they're letting themselves in for. And they're just coming uh-huh. because they're somebody's wife or somebody's husband or
mm-hmm.
even in the group, in the case of one of the couples, they were just a couple of non-Catholic, very
that
nice
came with
people
their
who just came with their friends, and you're like, boy, do we have something for you? But I think everybody was touched, and everybody had amazing experiences, and it was really cool. So that was what we did when we went to the Jordan. We also went from there to the Mount of Temptations, and that place just cracks me up every time, right? Because,
mm-hmm.
The place with the peacocks.
Went to Jericho.
Was Jericho, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and they had the peacocks, and I'm looking at a picture of Mary Lou on a camel right
here. Oh, yes,
there.
I always do my camel ride there.
You did a camel ride. And so, of course, they have these poor camels, you know, like outside the restaurant. Would you like a camel ride? Yeah, sure, I'll have a camel ride.
I'm just trying to help the economy.
Yeah, and so that was interesting. Here's a picture of Margie also on a camel. That's funny.
Yeah, there are a few brave souls that did that.
And I took a picture at the restaurant. The people who own the restaurant brought me flowers.
Oh, my. I didn't know
the
that.
The guy whips out some roses. I think they were probably generic roses that they give to everybody. You know. They probably recycled them because I left them there. What was I going to do? You know, take them with me on the bus, you know?
Well, and you know, you're near the Dead Sea when you're driving along there. So at that restaurant, they have these shops, and one of the shops
right.
has all the Dead Sea
right.
items, which you can find in a lot of places there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a
the Ahava,
the
beauty products,
right? The stop for lunch, and then also to shop.
So,
but the Mount of Temptations, as you walk out the door, you're looking up at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very high mountain. That's what's so amazing there. You're down in these valleys, and you look up, and there are these huge mountains.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially Jericho, I think, is, what, 600 feet below sea level?
Yes.
So when you're looking at a mountain, the mountain itself is probably not that much above sea level, but it certainly is very high from where you are in the vantage point. The Mount of Temptations is, of course, you know, what I thought was fascinating was we went to his baptismal site, and then we went to Jericho, which was basically half an hour, you know, in the bus. So for him, it would have been half a day.
It's non-Israeli. That's
walk.
Not... an Israeli settlement at all.
Yeah, but at the time, it was all under the Roman domination. Mm-hmm. So he would have gone from the river. Remember, it says mm-hmm. after his baptism in Mark, and especially it says the Holy Spirit drove him into the desert. And it's really not that far. I mean, from his baptismal site to the place, the traditional place of temptation, which is in the Judean wilderness. You just leave the Jordan, and then within, 15 minutes in the bus, it's desert. And then another 15 minutes and you're going into Jericho, and then there's the mountain of temptation. I mean, you can see the proximity of these sites.
And in Jericho, it's called the City of Palms,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is kind of interesting.
Well, it's the oldest inhabited mm-hmm. city on earth. I think it's 8 or 9,000 BC. So that would be
1250 BC, I think.
No. That's one of the settlements.
That's
1250.
That's Joshua. That's when the...
Yeah, that's Joshua. But mm-hmm. the Neolithic and the Stone Age, they found layers, archaeological layers of inhabitation at the site of Jericho that date back to 8,000 BC, which is 10,000 years ago. I mean, that's pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty far back, right? And of course, it has a place in the Torah, in the Septuagint, in the book of Exodus, the book of Joshua, as the entry point for the tribes of Israel into the Holy Land. But when you think that the tribes of Israel came from Jordan, because we've been there now, mm-hmm. we know where Moab is, we know where they would have been coming from. They came in from the plains of Moab. And then the first places, I think that they conquer, Ai, and they have this campaign of expansion, right, in Palestine. But again, geographically speaking, it makes sense that they would have approached into Israel in that particular way.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So, you've got the sycamore tree there.
Right.
Which, is not the real sycamore tree.
I'm looking at a street sign that says sycamore. And it's in English because obviously the only people who would really believe it are, English speaking. But what they're talking about is a sycamore fig tree, and which are prevalent. And they show this beautiful little sycamore tree with a fence around it. But it is definitely not the original sycamore. I mean, seriously. Whereas the olive trees at the Garden of Gethsemane are a couple thousand years old. I mean, some of them are. So, you could see that there's a possibility that those could have coexisted with the visit of the Lord. The sycamore tree you see in Jericho is similar to the sycamore tree that Zacchaeus climbed when Jesus came to Jericho, but definitely by no means the same sycamore tree, which I think is always interesting to underline. After Jericho, of course, now remember, Jericho is always the staging area for going up to Jerusalem. But it looks here from my photos, I'm seeing that from Jericho, we went to the Dead Sea instead. Because I'm looking at everybody going swimming in the Dead Sea. Yep, there it is.
Yep.
And at the Dead Sea, I must say, I didn't really care for the approach to the Dead Sea this
Not
time.
This time.
It was it was kind of muddy, and it was kind of... it was not as cold as last time, but last time I remember dunes and a beach and just going into the Dead Sea. Whereas this time they had bleachers and they had a whole steep steps down. It must have been a different approach.
Yes, I think it was a different site that we saw.
But it's funny, I'm looking at how many people actually took their shoes off, got in the water. Mm-hmm.
And we did that the first time, so.
Exactly.
But we could just cheer them on.
But there's a lot of people who actually went all the way in.
I'm looking
at a picture of Father Chris in his swimming trunks.
Yeah.
Going swimming. A lot of people, a lot of the guys.
Those brave souls, yeah.
They had
dressing rooms, and it was, they're all set for that type of thing. And
right.
And the people that went in certainly enjoyed it and floated on top.
They did.
Can't go underwater.
I will never forget Carol Nickel all dressed up with her bathing cap on. Diving into the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you know what? Those are memories that people will remember forever.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And the Dead Sea is rather peculiar because there's no way you could swim. I mean, there's no way you could sink.
No.
Even if you tried, I don't think you can go scuba diving. Well, I guess you could. You just add extra weight.
I don't know how you would do it, but.
But I mean, it is quite, and it is, of course, dead. Is it completely dead probably talk to Dr. John Yop from University of Kentucky. Probably not. There's all kinds of interesting microbes and bacteria that have adapted to the high salt environment. But for the most part, are there fish in the Dead Sea? No. Is there anything you could eat in the Dead Sea?
No.
No. Can you, you know, there's, it's,
but the Jordan empties into the Dead Sea and there's no way for the water that collects in the Dead Sea to go anyplace else.
That's right. It's sort of evaporates, issue. But it's been evaporating.
But it's all also because of the different things with the Jordan and irrigation and so forth, the Dead Sea has been receding because it was vastly larger
when
years
you
ago.
When you go to Masada, which we didn't go to last time, but
we didn't go to this time.
When you look over and you see, and also from Qumran, those are all places where you have this bird's eye view of the Dead Sea, and you can see where the Dead Sea used to be. At the time of Jesus and where it is now. And it's far. It's receded a mile or two.
And when you look, you know, across the Dead Sea, that's Jordan over there.
That's right.
And we could see Mount Nebo.
And when we were coming down from Mount Nebo, which we will tell you in another another show, we could see the Dead Sea from the other side.
Right. So we got to see it from both sides this time, which was fascinating.
Yeah, it was real. I mean, I'm really glad there's a good relationship between Jordan and Israel as well, because, it would be a whole lot harder to do the border crossing and everything if there was a lot of, you know, hanky-panky going around.
Exactly.
Right, between the two. I'm looking at a picture of our friend
Blaine. Yeah.
He bought a shofar. Now, a shofar is a ram's horn. And of course, you know, in Israel, they're on every corner, I suppose, in every gift shop. And he actually started playing it, which I thought was
He was calling people back to the bus.
Calling people back to the bus. And that's about what it took.
And that was one of the fun things because people didn't know each other before going on this trip. We had people from several different locations coming. And we formed into such a fun community on this trip and sharing and looking out for each other. It was just wonderful.
We will be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hi, welcome back to Real Living from the Dead Sea. We went to the Mount of Gethsemane, to the Garden of Gethsemane. I'm looking at photos of the Mass that we did on the rock in the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus would have prayed. I'm looking at a picture of the fresco in the church with Jesus praying. And I'm looking up at the beautiful vaulted ceiling in the church at the Garden of Gethsemane.
Is that the Church of All Nations or something? Is that what they call it? I know that to me is a very special place. Touching that rock and knowing where Jesus was and realizing what he was going to face and it was starting and so on and so forth. You know how that anticipation, when you know you're going to be in pain for something, I just can't even imagine what that was like for him. And that to me is one of the most moving sights to visit. It just always brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah, it was very, very suggestive. We had Mass there, and you should Google the church because it's got a beautiful sky blue mosaic vaulted ceiling with gold accents, and it's just gorgeous. After that, of course, we got to take a turn, or on our way actually back out and back to the church. It was pouring rain. I'm talking buckets of rain. And it was cold, but we got to walk through the Garden of Gethsemane with the olive trees.
Yeah, we walked around them this time.
And the beautiful, you know, millennial olive trees. And, of course, this site, too, is guarded by the Franciscans. And it's one of the sites that where they think, in fact, this was where Jesus and his disciples used to go pray.
And one of those trees, I mean, you can't reach and touch it, but they have marked a couple trees which they believe are original. Absolutely. And they're huge.
They're huge. They're kind of stunted looking, but they've got a big diameter. That's how you tell trees.
And, you know, it's not unusual for olive trees to survive that long. I never knew that.
Yeah.
But they have a lifespan that
And what's also interesting is from the Mount of Olives. Now, the geography is, of course, the Mount of Olives is separated from Mount Zion, where Jerusalem is, by the Kidron Valley. And it is slightly higher than Jerusalem. So that when you're on the Mount of Olives, you have a bird's eye view of the city of Jerusalem. So that, too, is one of those things where you can see how Jesus could have been looking over the Mount of Olives into Jerusalem and said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I wish I could gather you to myself, like a hen gathers her chicks," where he cries over Jerusalem because she was being so stubborn, so recalcitrant, right?
And, of course, there are roads and different things now. But the Kidron Valley, it's a steep slope and then back up on the other hill. It's not an enormous distance. And you really do get that sense of as you just described, Jesus looking out over the temple.
And on the Mount of Olives is also the Church of the Our Father, which I thought was, we didn't do that last time.
No, we didn't.
This was really fun. There's a Carmelite monastery inside there, and in there, and you go to the Church of the Our Father, and there are all kinds of the in the cloister of the monastery and of the church, there are all kinds of plaques with the Our Father in all kinds of languages. And I'm talking all kinds of
languages I had never heard of.
It was really cool to do that. And, of course, we said the Our Father in the chapel and all that. And that was, again, just a treat. Now, in the pouring rain, of course, the next stop was the Wailing Wall, known as the Western Wall, or in Hebrew, the Kotel. And that last time it was actually more of a of an intense experience for me because I went. Did I go with my children? I can't remember. But if you go to the Wailing Wall, of course, you know, when I'm referring to the Wailing Wall, what I'm referring to is the foundation walls of the temple rebuilt by Herod. Herod kind of shored up the second temple and kind of made it his own through a 45-year-plus restoration that kind of rebuilt it in certain areas and shored up the foundation in others. And what he did is he hewed these huge ton blocks of stone to shore up the foundations so that the Wailing Wall is composed of these rectangular blocks of gigantic stones, and that's unfortunately all that's left, of the temple after the destruction exacted by Titus first, and then it was Hadrian after that when he established the church, the temple to Zeus. He renamed Jerusalem Aelia Capitolina, and then he established a temple to Zeus right on top,
of course,
of the burial ground of Jesus, which I thought was fascinating because that kind of, he did us a favor because
he marks the spot.
He marked the spot and he protected it.
Exactly. I mean, God works mysterious ways, right?
But the Wailing Wall for me is always, I love it because it's where we intersect with our brothers and sisters, the Jews. And those guys are at that wall. It's divided by sex. The right side is for the women. The left side is for the men. This time it was pouring rain. There wasn't that much activity. But last time we were there, there were several boys having their bar mitzvah on the male side. And there were several, this time it was packed, too, on both sides, really. And I was wheeling Biz Clay, Father Chris Clay's mother. And I'm telling you, it was like buckets. It was like people standing there throwing buckets of water on you. It was like so... It was really wet. But we went to the Wailing Wall, and I had to, like, basically run people over with her wheelchair because you know how it is. People close ranks. You
have to kind of cut in. The minute
American,
somebody leaves, you just kind of take that space.
The American in me, after being here all these years, wants to stand in line because I know eventually my turn will come. But in those countries, you could stand in line for hours, and nobody will ever let you in, and everybody will cut in front of you, including the communion line, which is interesting. So the exposed wall is a very intense place because you could see a lot of the Jews praying with their distinctive rocking that they do.
They rock.
But their prayers are more like, "Oh God, why did you do this to us? We can't wait to come back and send the Messiah." And it's like, you know.
And all the pieces of paper that are stuck all over
those
the wall.
Well, those are the intentions. And we try to tell people, look, don't send prayer intentions to put in the wall. because that is a Jewish thing. I mean, that's the thing about hope, about no hope, really.
Right.
If you're going to have people send prayer intentions, send them and we'll put them on the altar at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is
what we did
this time. Mm-hmm. But needless to say, you go through these square blocks of stone, and there's like pieces of paper stuck
everywhere,
right?
And the other thing that you have to know is that you never turn your back on the wall. You have to back up from the wall, which is real interesting when, as you were doing, you were pulling a wheelchair and going backwards.
Going backwards, uphill. Backwards. But I mean, you know, again, I'm glad we went. It was amazing. The one thing about the Kotel that they didn't notice this time, but we did notice last time, was they handed me these pamphlets. And if you are a Jew and you are in Jerusalem and you need a place to stay and you're at the Wailing Wall, you just call this number, and they will put you up.
Really?
There's a network of families in Jerusalem that will take any Jew in who needs a place to stay, who has been visiting the Wailing Wall.
How did you get? Did you just see?
I was handed this. I must look Jewish. I don't know. I was handed this pamphlet last time, not this time. And I remember reading it. It was a pale blue pamphlet. It went, you know. And it had all the information about the wall. They call it the Kotel. And then it was about, you call this number if you need, and then they'll put you up not only for the night, for 2 or 3 weeks.
Hmm.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Back up one step to that Paternoster church.
Mm-hmm.
Did you mention that we went down to the cave underneath the church?
No.
Where Jesus taught the apostles how to say the Our Father.
So a lot of stuff happened in the pattern, in the caves in the Holy Land.
Mm-hmm. Well, another cave.
We have yet to go during the hot weather.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I wouldn't want to go in the hot weather.
But I'm thinking during the hot weather, the caves would have been a logical place where things would have been cool and out of the sun.
But, you know, it's with the Our Father, it's over 60 languages, including Braille. Mm-hmm. And very interesting place. This is the first time we visited that church on this trip. So
that was cool. So anyway, moving back out to the Wailing Wall, at the exit is the biggest mezuzah I have ever seen. I took a picture of it because it's like I don't know, not 6 feet, but maybe 4 or 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. The mezuzah, of course, is where it says in Numbers 6, where it says, Hear, Israel, Shema Yisrael, the Lord your God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your mind, with all your heart, with all your strength, and you will put the word of God on the lintel posts of your house. And that is where the idea of putting a little bit of the word of God, putting it in a little structure and putting it on, it was basically, this was basically on the door,
right,
on the lintel of the security checks as you're leaving the wall.
And in our times, we would be putting crucifixes over our doors.
Exactly.
Same idea.
Same sort of idea, but it just shows the premium that they put on the Word of God, on the Torah.
Which is what, you know, it's a good reminder for us.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is, right? So we only have about a minute and a half before we have to close. Summing up our experience so far in Jerusalem, It was cold, it was rainy, but as usual,
it didn't deter us at all.
The place, just the sense of the place was so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Visiting the wall is, as always, a privilege, even if you're like cattle, herded in and out. Just being able to walk around the streets of Jerusalem.
But you certainly come to that realization of how we are connected with the Jewish people when you're at the Wailing Wall.
Mm-hmm.
That we are fulfilled in our faith. We took the next step.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize the Messiah, and there's something to be said for that connection.
Well, the story that our guide told us is like the old man who falls asleep waiting for the train in the train station, and the train arrives while he's asleep, and the person comes in after him and says, "Hey, you missed the train." And he's like, "No, I didn't." "Yes, you did." "No, I didn't. I wasn't asleep." "Well, yes, you were." "Well, no, I wasn't." And then the old man resolves, "Well, I guess I'll catch the train the next time it comes around," which, of course, is, you know, the preaching of the word to the Jews worldwide before the second coming.
Mm-hmm.
Food for thought. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.